Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, September 13th, 2012. That was Who Can Hold Me from Honeycomb Tunes, the new CD from tonight's guest. For the past 6 years, Carla Adolph has created a diverse career for herself, touring North America in a 40-foot RV, performing in Jacob and Lily, the Emporiums, or as a solo artist. Her latest project, Honeycomb Tunes, features songs devoted to the subject of grief, and she's on the phone with us tonight to talk about her music and her newest CD from the thriving metropolis of High River, Alberta. Good evening, Carla.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I'm great. Thank you.
Now, let's take our listeners right back to the beginning. How did you get started in music?
Well, it was kind of a fluke. I met some great people when I was in high school, and they were all playing music, and some of them were part of a really fun little youth group that had a band. And so I wanted to be as cool as them, and so I asked for a guitar when I graduated from high school. My parents got me an acoustic guitar, and I started to learn some chords and learned some basic songs, and then when I went to university, I had a lot of opportunities to lead worship for different groups out in Edmonton. I went to U of A, So that was just a really great time for me, but throughout all of it, I liked leading worship, but it wasn't, I kind of had this itch, you know, and I couldn't figure out what it was until I had this sort of fateful experience, and I think a lot of artists do. I was in a coffee shop studying for something, and there was a waitress there that I had, you know, gotten to know a little bit, and I felt like I just needed to write her a song, and I had never written a song for somebody before, and so I did. I just kind of wrote this song, and I had my guitar with me that day, and after the coffee shop closed, I sang it for her, and sort of in the back, in the hallway where the coffee shop was, and it was just one of those moments where all the lights went on, and she just loved the song, and yeah, it was an amazing kind of experience, and I fell in love with songwriting. So that was where it started, and that would have been about 10 years ago, maybe 12 now.
Well, so who were some of your influences as a songwriter then, as you were starting to get, as you were starting out in that area?
Well, you know, I wasn't really influenced specifically by anyone, but I have very strong memories as a child listening to people like Bruce Springsteen, because my dad loved Bruce Springsteen and Meat Loaf. And so I would listen. My dad liked a lot of those sort of epic mm-hmm. 80s rockers, and I was influenced by that. And so I think it really pulled out of me this sort of big voice that I have, and I love to do that. And then as I was, you know, growing in my songwriting, I started listening to more of the classic Canadian songwriters like Joni Mitchell and Bruce Coburn and Leonard Cohen, those kind of guys. So there's like this little rock star in me, and then there's the love of the lyric and the melody in me too.
You know, it amazes me that the number of songwriters I talk to, especially Canadians, who cite Bruce Coburn as one of their influences. I mean, that man has such a reach in terms of being able to influence people, and his songwriting is so lyrical, but yet there's a depth to it that a lot of people really have to sort of stop and think about.
Mm-hmm, I agree. He is fantastic.
So when you're looking at all of this, when you got to that point where you started songwriting and that, when did you sort of decide to actually make music your career, that this was going to be what you were going to make a living out of, if you're making a living out of being a musician right now?
Making a living in quotation marks.
Yes, exactly.
No, I never really decided to make it my career. It was sort of like I decided to make it the thing that I would invest my life in, you know. And when we can combine those, that's awesome, you mm-hmm. know. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes your investment doesn't allow you to make a living out of it. I have an amazing husband that helps me do that, and he covers a lot of the gray areas that I don't cover financially for us. But for me, it was when I started to tour in 2005, I just fell in love with playing for a live audience. It was the thing again that I was just like, oh, light bulbs. And so for me, the real catalyst to continue is to continue performing.
Mm-hmm.
So I write and make albums out of a place where I want to provide new expressions of myself for my audience. So that's really the thing that drives me. And it's the thing that, yeah, I'm sort of arranging my life around getting out to be able to perform for people and tell their stories, because almost all of the songs I've written are people's stories.
Right.
So I'm telling stories and keeping people's stories alive. So that's really important to me. And as far as the living part, well, you can only hope.
Yeah.
Ups and downs.
Now, part of that, too, is the fact that you ended up in Jacob and Lily. How did that whole duet aspect come together for you?
Well, I was going on tour, and I kind of was truthfully scared to go on tour by myself. And this great friend, Caleb, that is just an amazing drummer, and him and I and my husband decided it'd be great to try it and, you know, tour together. And so we went out, like I said, on this first tour in 2005. It was 10 days. It was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And we loved it. You know, we both loved it. And so what we started to do is we started to sort of structure our world around playing together. And then we realized, well, we make sort of more energetic and a different kind of sound together than I do as a soloist. So we created that project, Jacob and Lily, and we sort of found that it was really for folk festivals and people that were kind of in that vein of music loving, you know, that sort of folk festival kind of a person. And it worked really well there, and we loved it. So I do that, and then I do the solo stuff. It's a lot more broad. I'll play mm-hmm. a lot more places than I will with Jacob and Lily.
Do you prefer one over the other?
No, because they're totally just different parts of who I am.
And looking at that, you're talking about folk festivals and that. I mean, I remember the Edmonton Folk Festival, which is just an incredible experience. What does it mean for you to be able to play in front of an audience? And you say you sort of draw from that. What does that live experience do for you as compared to being in the studio?
Well, it's just they're different, you know. Playing for a live audience is precious. It's a gift. It's something that I take seriously and value, you know. And when there's a great audience, man, you feel like you're on top mm-hmm. of the world as an artist.
Yeah.
And when there's a bad audience, you don't feel so good as an artist. And by that, I mean, you know, sometimes you play in places where it's just people aren't really into listening, or they're not as interactive as you hoped, because there's no real bad audience. Nobody's throwing tomatoes at me. But, yeah, it's just so much more fun to be with living, breathing people and wondering how they're responding to your songs. And I always let people ask me questions in my shows, because I love that. I love wondering what they're wondering. And then in the studio, you know, it's different. It's kind of like it's a photograph, right? It's a snapshot of that song or you in that moment. And it's, for me, I really like it because I feel like I can push myself, but it's also something that isn't as spontaneous as being in a live audience, and I really like that. I like the ability to change a song up because people are dancing. You play it for an extra 2 or 3 minutes. You know, I just like that. I find that really fun. So, but I don't hate the studio by any means. I really like the studio, and especially when you're surrounded by amazing, talented players, you just sit there and... just amazed at what they can add to your songs and stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty mutual love affair for me.
Well, we're going to talk about that whole studio experience in a few minutes when we come back from our break. We're going to continue our conversation with Carla Adolph, and we'll talk about her new CD, Honeycomb Tombs. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Graceland has no room left for me, no vacancy, I can feel it. Pictures and memories are stolen and put away, sealed with packing tape, I can feel it. This is a lonely crowd of people I'm in. This is another bad day, slowly setting in. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Graceland and Graveyards from Carla Adolph's Honeycomb Tomb CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Carla. Talking about that whole aspect of the studio and that we were talking about before is Honeycomb Tombs is the latest CD that you've done, and you've gone in studio and that. Where did that whole idea for that project come from?
Okay, so in 2011, I have the opportunity to be present when my friend's daughter passed away in the hospital in Colorado Springs. It was beautiful and powerful. It was the kind of experience that you never, ever forget. And what was amazing about it was Hadley was born, she was born without a portion of her brain, and so she was very disabled. She couldn't speak. She couldn't really make very consistent eye contact. She was in a wheelchair, you know, a lot of challenges. And at the time, she was 12 years old, I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was 12. And, you know, I went to the hospital to visit, and that day she just sort of turned, and the family, the McHugh family, is just so open about this experience, and they invited their whole community to come and basically usher Hadley, away, and it was incredible. We sang over her, we prayed over her, we cried, we laughed, we talked. There was about 30 people in the room when she died, and it was the most beautiful thing. And I watched that day how music was really important. You know, there was moments where we couldn't really do anything. Our bodies were broken and our hearts were crushed, and a song would play and it would just kind of carry you, you know. And it was just a mix of songs that were playing that day, and I thought, wow, I want to do that. I want to do an album that is for people that are in this moment, or maybe directly after, you know, in the weeks and months and years after losing. And so I started to ask people to send in their stories, because I love writing people's stories, and I feel like that's my job as an artist. So I got over 40 stories of people losing people, their kids, their moms, everyone. And so I started writing songs out of that, and compiled 10 songs that I felt best represented, I guess, at least a bit of like a journal, you know. I didn't want to make just 10 sad songs. I wanted to write 10 songs that covered a broad atmosphere of grief, because I was reading that, you know. I was reading some stories that were from 20 years ago, and so there was a level of peace and rest that those stories had, and then the stories of people that were currently, you know, dealing with something. So there was a lot to write out of, and so that's where it came from.
So now, where does the term Honeycomb Tombs itself come from?
There's a song called Flying Low on the album, and one of the lyrics, it says, breaking out of honeycomb tombs. And it was just an image that I thought was interesting, because, you know, bees, when they're making honey, they're in this hive, they're in this sort of tomb, right? It's dark, but they kind of know what they're doing, but they're in this dark place, and there's this very ornate organization about it. And I really trust that the spiritual element of grief, that if you trust, and, you know, whatever faith walk you're in, I believe that Jesus is the one that walks you through it. But you're trusting that if you dive in, you know, and you let yourself go into that place of grief that's really challenging and really hard, and you're going to be in this beautifully organized, deep, provisional place. And then when you open that honeycomb, what happens? All the bees fly out, right? But what remains is this beautiful sustenance that they've created. And so I thought that was a really interesting metaphor for grief, for diving in, you know, into grief, that it's often this deeply private thing that's happening, but at some point you're going to come out of it, and there's going to be this provisional thing that you have for the rest of your life. A lot of people have great wisdom, and a lot of people forgive out of that place or find healing out of that place. So that's a really long explanation for two words.
Yeah. And when you look at and when you listen to the song, you actually sense that, because the first part you can sense that element of grief, that element of grieving. But then when you hit the last part of the song, there's an element of celebration, an element of release that's coming through out of that.
Yeah, I think that is. The best of grief, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the worst of it, but the best of grief is the hope that that can happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted the album to be about, the hope that you can emerge. So that's really why I chose that those two words to describe the whole album. Mm-hmm.
Well, looking at that whole process, and you talked about how in the songwriting you ask people to send you details and send you stories about what they went through when they were grieving and that. As you start working on a song and as you start composing a song, what comes to you first? Is it the words that come first? Is it the melody, the music? Or does it just matter depending on which song? What's sort of your methodology in terms of writing something like that?
Earlier on in my career or my songwriting life, it would have been always melody first. I'm mostly attracted to that. But now, as I'm probably just, it's not that I'm any better, it's that I'm needing to be better. I can sit down and force myself to write lyrics first. And for the album, I did do that. I tried to be more of a take a more of a poetry approach, and that's because I was writing. I was trying to write a little bit more metaphorically. There's a few songs that I wrote the lyrics first, and there's a few songs I wrote the melody first. I don't often write the music first. Music and melody end up kind of being partners. So, but mm-hmm. I'm a slave to melody. I like a good hook, probably.
Right. Well, looking at all of that and looking at story and writing people's story in that, what attracts you to a story? When do you know when you hear a story or when you read a story that there's something in here that I can pull and use for a song? What is it that draws you to a particular story to say this can be a song?
I don't know, to be honest. You know what happens? This is kind of how I view it. I kind of picture myself as a songwriter, like a woman in the fall, you know, making jam. So you have an abundance, right? You have tons of tomatoes or tons of strawberries or whatever you have. You have an abundance, and you throw all of that garden produce, all that fruit into a pot, and you let it stew. And that's what happens. So the reason why I try and, you know, be as available as I can, just, you know, whether it's through the internet or mostly at my shows, is because what happens is I'm collecting fruit, collecting abundance, and I'm throwing it all in the pot in my brain. And then what happens is, unless it's a very specific story that I write a direct song out of, a lot of songs carry a few stories in them. And what I sort of view myself as a preservationist. And so I'm going to throw in some sugar into that thing and hopefully, you know, throw it in a jar and it'll be jarred. And that's, for me, the most important thing, is that somebody's story has a preserved memory. It's there. It's you know, and if it's recorded, even better. Like, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my perspective on it. And yeah, so really, I just collect a lot of collecting, a lot of enjoying house concerts, because I can sit down afterwards for an hour and hear great stories and listen to beautiful people share their life. And you know, a lot of times it's that song brought up so and so or this, and so we'll just listen, you know, and that's kind of where it comes from. So for me as an artist, inspiration is people, and so I'm trying to be personal wherever I go, right, as best as I can.
Right. Well, what we need to do is take one final break, and then we'll come back and finish our conversation with musician Carla Adolph. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Again, we
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Mama Wing from Carla Adolph's Honeycomb Tomb CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Carla. What's next on the agenda for you?
Well, I'm excited. I'm going to be in Southern Ontario at September 20th to the 24th. I was looking. I think the closest show to the Guelph area will be in Georgetown, and it's at Norval United Church on...
Okay, I know where that is.
...the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm playing there. All of my shows are listed on my website, carlaadolph.ca, and... Yeah, so I'll be coming out there and going out to BC a couple of times in the fall and playing in Alberta. And yeah, just really enjoying playing and promoting this album. You know, it's free digitally, so I'm excited to get out and share it with people. And the reason it's free is because of the subject matter. We want it to be available to those who are grieving, and we wanted it to be free.
Right. Well, let's give the people your website address one more time so they can find that, and they can find Honeycomb Tombs, and they can find out about the tour. What's your website one more time? And spell it out. Spell it out for
carlaadolph.ca, and I spell my name with a K, K-A-R-L-A. And my last name is A-D-O-L-P-H-E.
Right. Well, Carla, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thank you to my guest, Carla Adolph, and be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.